The last few weeks we've been looking at a guy who God made his name great, a guy named Abram. Last week we also saw that God changed his name to Abraham because all these promises that God had made to Abram, he then started to fulfill those promises and confirm those promises in covenants with him. And through that he changed his name from Abram, which means my father is exalted, to Abraham, the father of many. And we've been looking at Abraham and Abram because it is through him that God decided that through Abram and through his descendants that he would reveal himself to the world. And that's how we know a lot about who God is. Abram and his descendants have touched people ever since. They're touching us today. God has worked through them from the very beginning through Abram. All the stories we have in the Old Testament are stories of God revealing himself and interacting with Abram's descendants. And a lot of people have been touched by Abram and by his descendants. During Abram's time, there's a number of people who we have stories of in the Bible that are important figures in God's plan and in God's story. Next week we'll look at a few of them. We'll look at his son, Isaac, his other son, Ishmael, and both of their mothers, Sarah and Hagar. So we'll look at them next week. But today we're going to focus in on one particular guy that was with Abram from the beginning. That there's a few stories that revolve around this guy. He provides a little contrast between the faithful decisions and faithful following that Abram did to God versus this guy not quite having the same discernment and the same level of following God in his decision making. And this is a guy named Lot. Okay, so we're going to look at the story of Lot today. Who was Lot? Well, if we go way back to when we first introduced Abram in chapter 11, in verses 26, 27 through the end of the chapter, we saw the story of this family of a guy named Terah. And we saw that Abram was a son of Terah. In verse 31, we see that Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. So we see that Abram was the son of Terah, and Lot was the grandson of Terah. We see earlier on that Lot's father, Haran, was a brother of Abram. So therefore, Abram was an uncle to Lot. Okay, so Lot was a nephew of Abram. So why does Lot play a big part of the story of Abram? Well, if you keep going on, verse 12, we see that the Lord had said to Abram to leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. And then in verse 4, so Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Okay, so we see that Lot went with him from the very beginning. Why did he? You know, God had commanded him to leave his father's household, but yet he brought part of his father's household along. And the thought of this, well, we see that Haran, his father, had died in Ur, up in verse 28 of chapter 11. So the thought is that Abram took Lot, his nephew, under his wing and carried him along. And so we see them coming together there. Abram took him under his wing. Now, if you remember the story of Abram, that very beginning part, they go, he lives in Canaan, he moves to Egypt, and then leaves Egypt and comes back to Canaan. How did God bless Abram during the first years in Canaan and Egypt? Chapter 13, verses 1 to 2 say that, so Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram became very wealthy in livestock and in silver and in gold. Okay, so God blessed Abram with great wealth. Instead of money in a bank or stock certificates or mutual funds, they didn't have those things in those days. Instead, wealth was land, which he didn't have any. Wealth was livestock, it was servants, silver, gold, the precious metals that could be traded as money. Okay, and Abram had lots of that. Okay, And as a result, Lot had lots of that too. Just, you rub elbows with someone and who's blessed by God, and you get to be blessed as well. So a big part of God's purpose in blessing Abram is we see back in the very first calling in verse 2 of chapter 12, I will bless you so that you can be a blessing. And so God certainly blessed Abram in many, many ways, both materially and spiritually. Was Lot blessed by being with Abram in Canaan and Egypt? Yes. In verse 5, we see, now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. Okay, he had become wealthy as well, just by association with Abram, by hanging around Abram. Eventually, they separate. And we saw this a couple of weeks ago, that Lot and Abram could no longer stay together. We see that in verses 6 to 9 of chapter 13. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. Quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. On top of that, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in the land at that time, so the land just wasn't enough to support Abram's livestock plus Lot's livestock, not to mention the livestock of the people who lived there and who owned that property. So Abram said to Lot, hey, let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herdsmen and mine, because we're brothers. Isn't the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. So Abram saw they could no longer stay together. And by this time, Lot had matured and aged and could run his own show and no longer needed Uncle Abram to watch out for him as he grew up. So Abram said, okay, you decide. Now, Abram, being the elder, obviously had the right and had the choice and would normally be the one who would decide, okay, I'm going over here to this key land and you go find wherever you want to go. But instead, Abram gave the choice to Lot. And why did he do that? Because he trusted God. He knew that God would take care of him. Even if all that Lot left him was the desert, he knew that God would provide. God promised to bless him. God would take care of him. So he wasn't worried about that. So you see, this offer was a sign of faith on Abram's part. What about Lot? Did Abram trust God? Did Lot trust God in choosing and picking the land that that he would go to? Next verse says, Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered. That's the Jordan River. Of course, there's a lot of water there in the river. And it was well watered just like the garden of the Lord, just like the Garden of Eden, the land of Egypt towards Zoar. And so this was down in the area towards Zoar. We'll hear more about that as we go on. This was before Yahweh destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself not just some of the green stuff, but the whole plain of the Jordan. And he set out towards the east, and the two men parted company. So rather than trusting God, rather than saying, hey, I'll take half of this good stuff, you take the other half of the good stuff, he said, I want all this good stuff. And he took the plain of the Jordan River and headed off that way. So his choice, looked to be a good choice, looked to be the best thing to do. If you've got a lot of cattle and livestock to take care of, that's perfect land to do so. But we see a sign of a weak faith. In Proverbs it says, in verse 2 of 16, it says, all a man's ways seem innocent to him, but his motives are weighed by the Lord. And in verse 25, there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. So if we make our decisions based on what looks good to us as humans, what looks good, and that's what you see he did, is he looked up and he looked towards the east and he saw that it was good. So again, the eyes. Does that remind you of anything? Well, when Adam and Eve in the garden, they looked and they saw that the tree and the fruit of that tree that they weren't supposed to eat of looked like it was good to eat. So our eyes can fool us. Our desires, our human desires can fool us. And if we trust on our own intellect of what is good for us, a lot of times that will fool us and we'll miss what really is good for us. And God knows our motives. He knows the reasons we make the choices that we make. So we need to look to God for guidance in what's right when we have decisions and choices to make. So the faith that Lot had was challenged by this choice. Why was that? Now, verses 12 and 13, back in Genesis 13. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent near Sodom. Now, the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. Okay, Sodom is famous. People know about Sodom, even if they don't know anything about the Bible. If they're not Christians or Jews, people still know about Sodom these days. It's that that evil that is still famous about that. And so he picked a land that looked good, but it ended up being the worst place he could go for his faith development, faith growth, his discipleship. He lived with the most evil and faithless men of all time. Okay. Now we saw a story of something that happened to him while he was there, not necessarily because he was living with evil men, but evil begets evil and things rub off, and he had problems, numerous problems. We only see some of them in our stories. But in chapter 14, we see this story about where these kings from the east came together, and they joined forces in the Valley of Siddim, that is the Valley of the Salt Sea. Then, verses 10 to 12, those kings gathered together and they attacked. They went to war against the kings of the south, the kings over in the Sodom and Gomorrah area. Okay, the king of Sodom, the kings of Gomorrah, the kings of Admah and Zeboim and Bela. Okay, so the kings right around that area. They had a battle. In verses 10 and 12, now the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits, and when the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, some of the men fell into them, and the rest fled to the hills. So basically, the armies of the defenders were gone, run away or killed. So therefore, the four kings that were attacking them seized all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah, all their food, and then they went away. One other note there, though, in verse 12, they also carried off Abram's nephew Lot and his possessions, since he was living in Sodom. Okay, so now Lot is captured in this battle. What happens to captives? Well, they either get killed or they become slaves. So Lot, who was nephew of God's chosen Abram, is now destined to be a slave for people over in the Iraq area, is where these kings were from. Okay, so that's where he's headed. How were they saved from that? Verse 14, when Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he called out the 318 trained men born in his household and went in pursuit of these armies. You see how big his wealth was. 318 of his servants were well-trained fighting men. Okay, he also teamed together, we see in the story, that teamed together with some of the local allies that he had, some friends that lived where he was living, and some of their men. And he pursued these armies, it says here, as far as Dan, which is way north, 100 miles away from where he was living at the time, which on foot is a long distance, and on foot with 318 trained men plus the others. During the night, Abram divided his men to attack them, and he routed them, pursuing them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus, which is just much, much further away. So he went and routed these other armies. He recovered all the goods, verse 16, and brought back his relative Lot and his possessions, together with the women and the other people. When you conquer an army, you get all the spoils of the war, and any spoils that they picked up, you get all those. And so Abram and his allies had all those, okay, and recaptured all those. Why is this in the Bible? Well, partly because it tells the story about Abram, the story about Lot, but we also see that God was involved in this story. Verse 18, we see that as Abram was coming down south and heading back home and back towards Sodom, where these people were from, and he was going to turn those people over, he ran into a guy named Melchizedek, who was king of Salem, that eventually became Jerusalem. And Melchizedek came out and brought bread and wine. He was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed Abram, saying, "Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand." then Abram gave him a tenth of everything. So we see here that Melchizedek recognized that the reason that Abram had this great victory is not because of Abram and his 318 fighting men, but because of God, that God provided this victory. And we see that Abram recognized that too, and recognizing Melchizedek as a priest of the Most High God, we see the first tithe mentioned in the Bible, that he gave a tenth of everything to Melchizedek. Okay? So that's the story that we've seen with Lot. And then last week we got to chapter 18, and it's in chapter 18 that we pick up the story of Lot again. We see in chapter 18 that God, and this is the last story we had in last week's lesson, and God came to Abram, physically this time. You know, we go back in various other places where God appeared to Abram, and we see, for instance, in chapter 15, verse 1, that he came in a vision. You know, verse 1 of chapter 17, it says the Lord appeared to him and appeared to him, so we don't know how that was. But we do know in chapter 18 that God came physically as a human, which is interesting. And why is that? Why did God come to him? Abram was 99 years old at the time. Verses 10 and 11. It says, "Then Yahweh said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance of the tent, which was behind him. Abram and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. Okay? So God waited. They'd been trying to have kids all their life, never been able to have kids. Sarah was barren. And now, when it's physically impossible for them to have kids, Abram's 99 years old, Sarah is 89 years old, and God says, okay, now that you know you can't do it, I'm going to do it. And within the year, Sarah's going to have a son to you, Abram, and I'll come back at that time, it says. Now, what's interesting is when God appeared to him, if you go back to the first three verses, it says that Yahweh appeared to Abram near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abram looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, it's just three guys standing by, but when he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of the tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by." So Abram walked with God. Abram talked with God. Abram had a living relationship with God, and therefore was able to recognize God when God showed up. Okay, recognize God in these three men. Do we recognize God in others? Okay, God works His Spirit through us. He works through each of us. Do we see God working in our lives? Do we see God working in the lives of those around us? Abram did. We looked at those verses and we looked at that time last week. Now, was there some other reason why God was there? Did God have any other place to go while he was visiting earth in human form? Verse 16. When the men got up to leave, they looked down toward Sodom, and Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way. Okay? So they were going to Sodom. Why? Why was God going to Sodom? Verse 20 and 21. Then the Lord said, "The outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great and their sin so grievous that I will go down and see if what they've done is as bad as the outcry that's reached me. If not, I will know." Okay? Now, did God really need to come down and go to Sodom to check it out? No, God knew. Okay? Why did he say this? Well, because he's telling Abram. He's revealing to Abram what his plans were. You know why? Well, let's back up. Verses 17 to 19, it says, Yahweh said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him, because I've chosen him, so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham just what he's promised him." Okay? So Abram had a relationship with God. God had made these covenants that we looked at last week and promises to Abram. And there's this living relationship there. And God says in front of Abram, know, should I keep a secret from you here about what I'm going to do? No, I need to tell you what I'm going to do. And I'm going to go check out Sodom because the evil is rampant there, the outcry is great, and I've come to check it out. Okay? God already knew the answer. God already knew what the situation was, but he was revealing this to Abram. We'll see what comes of that, that God knew would come from that as well. Now, they were leaving. It says the men got up to leave in verse 16, and they looked down toward Sodom, and Abram started walking along with them. So after God said that and said what he was going to do to Sodom, did God leave then and they kept going? Verse 22, it says, the men turned away and went toward Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. So we see that the two others kept going toward Sodom, and God stayed with Abram, okay? Because there is more conversation to be had with his chosen one here. We'll see what's interesting to see in chapter 19, verse 1. When we get there, you can see that the two angels then arrived at Sodom. So the story that we have at Sodom is just has those two angels that left God behind with Abram. Since God stayed there, and that gave Abram an opportunity to ask questions or comment or whatever. So what did Abram think about God judging the city? Not only this evil city, but, hey, this is where Lot lives. Okay, that's where his nephew lives. He's already gone and rescued Lot once. Verse 23 to 25. Then Abram approached him and said, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? What if there's 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of 50 righteous people in it? Now, here's where I think he's kind of stretching it a little bit. Far be it from you to do such a thing, to kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? I can see he's trying God's patience here. But you see that God knows Abram's heart. And God knows that Abram is concerned for his nephew. He knows that God is almighty, all-powerful. And, so Abram, whether he uses the right words or not, is standing up and asking for God's mercy on Sodom if, basically, he's concerned about his nephew, as you can see. So how did God respond to Abram's bold request? Verse 26, the Lord said, if I find 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Okay, so Abram got God's agreement to spare the city if he were able to find 50 righteous people. Well, then Abram thought, okay, well, is there 50 righteous there? What if there's not that many? So he speaks even more boldly in the next couple verses. Abram spoke up again. Now that I've been so bold as to speak to the Lord, though I'm nothing but dust and ashes, so he recognized his position with God. What if the number of the righteous is 5 less than 50? Will you destroy the whole city because of 5 people? God said, if I find 45 there, I will not destroy it. Okay? So he negotiated for 45, if the number was 45. So God was being very patient with Abraham. How did God show his patience even further? Verse 29, once again he spoke to him, God, what if only 40 are found there? God said, for the sake of 40, I will not do it. Okay? So, he knocked it down from 50 to 45 to 40, so now Abraham's satisfied. Okay, that takes care of my nephew because he's got all these servants and that should take care of it, right? Verse 30, then he said, may the Lord not be angry, but let me speak. What if only 30 can be found there? He answered, I won't do it if I find 30. Okay, you can see God just being very patient. Did this bother God? Did this upset God, Abram being so bold? Verse 31, Abram said, well, now that I've been so bold to speak to the Lord, what if only 20 can be found there? He said, for the sake of 20, I will not destroy it. Okay? So God is just being more and more patient. He lovingly listened to Abraham's request and graciously granted it. Okay? To what extent did God show his love to Abram? Next verses. Then he said, may the Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 could be found there? He answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. When the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left, and Abraham returned home. Okay? So, God went along with Abraham because of his relationship, because of the faith that Abraham had. And you see his patience, his mercy. He agrees to save this most wicked city where thousands of people live, even if only 10 people can be found there who are righteous. Okay? Now, we'll see as we go on. Lot had, we know of Lot's family having at least 6. We have Lot and his wife. We know that he had 2 daughters, and those 2 daughters were both betrothed. And so there were 2 son-in-laws. Now, betrothed is not quite completely married, but it's more than being engaged that we have today. There is a ceremony, and they're legally bound once they were betrothed. They just weren't living together until they were married. And when Abram saw Lot, he had lots of servants and wealth, and the household. You take a look at Abram's household, and everyone in his household were circumcised, were faithful. They lived in the faith of Abraham. They lived faithful to God. So certainly, Lot and his family and his household, certainly there's at least 10 righteous in all those if nobody else in Sodom is righteous, right? So Abram felt that Lot would be protected and would not be caught up in this, and Sodom would be spared with at least 10. So he felt okay with the 10. All right? Well, let's move on to Sodom. And let's see what happens. Now, was Lot just living near Sodom? We saw earlier that he camped out in the plains there by Sodom. At this time, was he still out in a tent by Sodom, or had he moved into the city? Verse 1, the 2 angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. What's this sitting in the gateway? Is he just a loafer? Is he just screwing around? No, the gateways of the cities are where the judges, the elders, the city rulers sat. And when people had things to bring before the city rulers, or they had arguments or judgments that were needed, they came and saw the officials there at the city gate. So people from inside the city went to the gate. People from outside the city came to the gate. And so with him sitting at the city gate, we see that he is a city ruler. So he's not only living near Sodom, we're about to see that he was living in Sodom, and he was an active leader of Sodom. Okay? So it had been integrated into the city. Now, when the visitors showed up in chapter 18 to Abraham, we see that Abraham hurried up and cooked a meal and fed them and gave them rest and tended to them and stood by like he was a waiter serving on them. Do we see similar hospitality with Lot? Verses 2-3. My lords, Lot said, please turn away to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night and then go on your way early in the morning. No, they answered, we'll spend the night in the square. But Lot insisted so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate. Okay? So we see the same sort of hospitality that Abram had for these strangers. Okay? He urged them to stay with him. Instead of staying out in the square, he would take care of them, and he fed them. Now, they came to kind of check out how things were going in Sodom, and if things were as bad as what the word was about Sodom. How long did it take them to figure out how bad things were? Verses 4 and 5. Before they'd gone to bed, all the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. They called out to Lot, hey, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out with us so we can have sex with them. So immediately that night, after dinner, before they go to bed, they find out just what kind of place this really is. And we're not just talking about a few renegades and a few troublemakers, a few bad apples. It says here all the men, so from every part of the city. So the whole city was involved in this evil lifestyle and wickedness. How did Lot show his sacrificial service to these men of God? Verses 6-8. Lot went outside to meet with them and shut the door behind him. So he's, he went out. You can just kind of picture this. They're out at the door. He walks out and closes the door back behind him. And he said, "No, my friends, don't do this wicked thing. Look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you like with them. But don't have anything to do with these men, for they've come under the protection of my roof." That seems a little extreme to me. I don't think I would make the same offer. I know I wouldn't. But you see his concern for these two. I don't see that he recognizes that these are anything other than a couple of men. He doesn't realize they're angels at this point. But you can see he's protecting them. His hospitality is going to an extreme here. The problem is he's trying to protect them against one wrong, but he's replacing one wrong with another wrong in offering his daughters. Well, he was a leader, right? He was a city leader and a judge, so certainly his argument or his trying to get them to reconsider what they were trying to do was able to reason with him, right? Verse 9, "Get out of our way," they replied. And they said, "Hey, this fella came here as an alien. Now he wants to play the judge. We'll treat you worse than them." And they kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. So he had no influence on them. Okay. So then Lot then finds out that these two men are more than just two men. 10 to 11. "But the men inside reached out, pulled Lot back into the house, and shut the door. And then, verse 11, they struck the men who were at the door of the house, young and old, with blindness. They couldn't even find the door." Okay. Well, these are obviously not just men. Lot's realizing that right now. Okay. So they had saved Lot from these men trying to get to him, trying to get through to the door through him. Besides that, how else did they protect Lot? 12 to 13. "The two men said to Lot, 'Do you have anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons or daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? If so, then get them out of here, because we are going to destroy this place. The outcry to the Lord against its people is so great that he has sent us to destroy it.'" Okay? So they warned Lot of the impending destruction, gave him a chance to gather together all his people. Now we're going to see if there's 10 of them. Okay? And told him to leave. Okay? How tough was it for Lot to get his family safely out of Sodom? He's got this wild group while they're all blinded now. So this mob outside. This was his home, right? 14 to 15. "So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, 'Hurry, get out of this place because Yahweh is about to destroy the city.' But his sons-in-law thought he was joking." Okay. "With the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, 'Hurry, take your wife, your two daughters who are here, or you're going to be swept away when the city is punished.'" So he went and talked to his sons-in-laws. They refused to go. And here we see it says that with the coming of the dawn, daylight's coming up. You know, all this was happening before they went to bed. Now daylight's coming up. It's been all night. And they're still not ready to go. They're reluctant to leave. Now what's interesting here is whatever happened to Lot's great wealth and his servants. He had a bunch of servants before. Now it's just him, his wife, his two daughters, and these two sons-in-law who don't want to leave. What happened to him? Well, we can only speculate, but living for years around this evil area of Sodom, whether it was squandered, whether it was lost in some other way, he's away from God's grace with Abram, so we see that he's not the man of wealth that he was before. He is still a respected leader. We saw that though. Okay, so the angels intervened, and how do they intervene again to try to save Lot and his family? Verses 16 to 17. Okay, when he hesitated, they said in verse 15, "Hurry up, take your wife and your two daughters and get out of here. You're going to get caught up in this destruction." But he hesitated. He's resisting God's saving grace here. So the men grasped his hand and the hands of his wife and his two daughters and led them safely out of the city, for the Lord was merciful to them. As soon as they brought him out, one of them said, "Flee for your lives. Don't look back and don't stop anywhere in the plain. Flee to the mountains or you'll be swept away." Okay? So they gave him instructions. They led him safely out of the city so that no one would stop him. And they get out and get going and told him what to do. Okay? What's the last way that the angels protect Lot and his family? Going on. But Lot said to them, "No, my lords, please. Your servant has found favor in your eyes, and you've shown great kindness to me in sparing my life. But I can't flee to the mountains. This disaster will overtake me, and I'll die. Look, there's a town near enough to run to, and it's small. Let me flee to it. It's very small, isn't it? You know, it's not like there's a lot of evil people that are going to be there. There's not many people there. Let me flee to it, then my life will be spared." He said to him, "Very well. I'll grant this request too. I will not overthrow the town you speak of, but flee there quickly because I cannot do anything until you reach it." And that's why the town was called Zoar. Zoar means small. Okay. So instead of going to the distant mountains, Lot asked and the angel granted him to go to Zoar, to this little town, and be protected there, that Zoar would not be destroyed. So Zoar is being protected because of Lot's request here. How far out of town was Lot when God began destroying the cities? 23-25. By the time that Lot reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land. So this was noontime, by the time he got there, or daylight, let's just say. He had left at dawn. Then the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, including all those living in the cities, and also the vegetation in the land. So they waited, just as they said they would, until Lot reached Zoar, and then the destruction started. And you see fire from heaven coming down and destroying Sodom, destroying Gomorrah, and not just that, but the whole plain, the whole area, everything except for Zoar. Okay. God wiped it, the whole plain clean. Okay. What's interesting is that this, it says here, verse 24, then Yahweh, the Lord, you know, the Lord in capital letters is Yahweh, rained down burning sulfur. Okay. And it came from Yahweh out of the heavens. So it wasn't the angels that were destroying, it was God doing the destruction. Okay. The angels protected Lot and got Lot out of the way. But now God was doing the destruction here. Did all of Lot's family make it to Zoar in time? Verse 26, but Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. The angels told him very clearly, flee, run away, go quickly, go to the mountains. Well, okay, you can go to Zoar, but do not look back. But she looked back. She didn't want to leave her life behind. She didn't want to leave the living in Sodom behind. And so she looked back and she turned into a pillar of salt. Had God saved Lot and his daughters because they were righteous? Is that why they were saved? Next verses. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord. He looked down towards Sodom and Gomorrah, towards all the land of the plain. And what did he see? He saw dense smoke rising from the land, like smoke from a furnace. So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham. Again, that remembered word doesn't mean he ever forgot Abraham. But he brought Abraham to mind, and he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. So why was Lot saved? He was saved on account of his relationship with Abraham. You know, how many times has your relationship with someone else saved you, blessed you, protected you? How many times are other people who have relationships with you, how many times are they blessed, protected, benefit from their relationship with you? Okay? Because of your relationship with God. I thought this was an interesting quote that I found in a book from Edersheim. It says that the deep sea basin was examined and found to consist of two different lakes. That's a big, big lake area. And if you look at the shape, you can kind of see two different areas. And there's one that's 1,300 feet deep. Okay, very, very deep. I think this is like the deepest, some of the deepest place on earth here. The other is 13 feet deep. Okay, so a big area is 13 feet deep there in the south. That shallow lake is likely the site of Sodom and Gomorrah, which were likely on the shore of the deep Sweetwater Lake. Okay, so the thought is that the 100-foot lake was a good freshwater, sweetwater lake, and Sodom and Gomorrah were on its banks. And then when this destruction came, all of that sunk 13 feet and became underwater. It says here, the chemical composition of the Dead Sea points to volcanic activity that may have destroyed and then submerged the area. Okay, volcanic activity is raining sulfur, fire, lava, and that's what we see here, that God rained sulfur, burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah. So it all kind of fits there. Okay, going on. Lot is in Zoar. He's been protected from this destruction of Sodom. Does he stay there, or does he go back to his uncle Abram? Verse 30. Lot and his two daughters left Zoar, okay, so he didn't stay there, and they settled in the mountains because he was afraid to stay in Zoar. Okay, the people there, he was an outsider, and all this horrible stuff had happened. So where did they live in the mountains? He and his two daughters lived in a cave. Okay, so why didn't he go back to his uncle Abram? My guess is that he was too ashamed, too embarrassed, too... didn't want to face Abram because of what he had done, what he had been with. He was no longer the Lot that Abram knew. And he just went and lived in a cave with his daughters. Okay, what problem did Lot's daughters have where they decided to take matters in their own hands? Going on, one day the older daughter said to the younger, "You know, our father's old and there's no man around here to lie with us, as is the custom all over the earth. Well, let's get our father to drink wine and then lie with him and preserve our family line through our father." Okay? It was just these three living in this cave, and dad was getting old, and they felt that they needed to continue the family line, and this is how they would do it. How did Lot react to this plan? 33 on. Well, that night they got their father to drink wine, and the older daughter went in and lay with him. He wasn't aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. Well, the next day, the older daughter said to the younger, "Last night I lay with my father. Now let's get him to drink wine again tonight, and you go in and lie with him so we can preserve our family line through our father." So they got their father to drink wine that night also, and the younger daughter went and lay with him. Again, he was not aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. So both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. So we see that Lot didn't really know about it until they started turning pregnant. Probably then he probably found out about it, but he didn't know what was going on. So this wasn't his idea there. Why is this story important enough to be included in the Bible? Well, going on, the older daughter had a son, and she named him Moab. Now, he's the father of the Moabites of today. Okay, Moabites were a group of people, lived over in the east of the Salt Sea, okay, southern part there. The younger daughter also had a son, and she named him Ben-Ami. Okay, Ben-Ami means son of my people. By the way, Moab sounds like the Hebrew for from the father. Okay, Ab is father. And she named him Ben-Ami. He's the father of the Ammonites of today. Well, the Ammonites were a group of people that were on the east side of the Dead Sea, just right north of Moab, right north of the Moabites. So these people, the Moabites and the Ammonites, we'll hear a lot more about them when the Israelites come back from Egypt. And there's many years where they have numerous encounters with the Ammonites and the Moabites. The Ammonites and the Moabites create lots of problems for the Israelites, just as the Ishmaelites, who are the Arabs of today, create a lot of problems for the Jews, for the Israelites today. So these black sheep of the family, or the other parts of the chosen family that are not chosen, end up creating problems for the chosen families. Chapter 20. We get back into Abraham here. That pretty well concludes the story of Lot. But what we see a lot with Lot is a big difference between Lot's faith and ability to make faithful decisions and discerning decisions, and Abraham's faith and his ability to make discerning decisions. And we see many stories of faith with Abraham. We see some faith with Lot. We see some similar reactions, but we also see some very bad choices. Now, what about Abraham? Do we have any bad choices with him, or was he always faithful? Did he always exhibit a stronger faith and trust in God than Lot did? Well, back in Genesis 12, very first chapter where we saw Abraham, where we first learned about him, verses 11 and through 13, we see that, starting at 10, there was a famine in the land, and this is in the land of Canaan. So Abraham went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. And as he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, "I know what a beautiful woman you are. When the Egyptians see you, they'll say, 'This is his wife.' Well, then they'll kill me, but they'll let you live. So say that you're my sister, so that I will be treated well for your sake and my life will be spared because of you." Why did he do that? Because he was afraid. Because he was afraid that the Egyptians would kill him to get to his wife. Well, would God let that happen? That's not part of God's plan. God had all these promises for Abram, and God had chosen Abraham. He's not going to send him to Egypt to be killed. So this is a little faith test that God gives him, and Abraham flunks it. Now, we see later that he's not telling a complete lie. Because Sarai was his sister, she was his half-sister. Same dad, different mom. But he wasn't telling the whole truth either, right? She was his wife. And so a half-truth is the same thing as a half-lie. And that half-lie was there because he wasn't trusting that God would take care of him and protect him and Sarah in Egypt. Well, we then have seen some good stories of faithfulness. And, you know, he was young, right? He was only 75, 80 years old. He didn't know better, right? It was in his youth. It was in his youth and his relationship with God. So after a number of years, you know, we're getting up now to where in chapter 20 he's 99-100 years old. So surely he's learned that lesson, right? Well, let's take a look. Chapter 20, verses 1 to 2. Now, Abraham moved on from there where he was staying and moved into the region of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. Now, the Negev is the southern part of Palestine, dry, not quite desert, but certainly not green. And so he moved down south there. And there, Abraham said of his wife, for a while he stayed in Gerar. Gerar was one of the five big cities of the Philistines. We'll talk more about the Philistines later when we talk about David and Saul. But Gerar was a big town there, so he lived near that town. And there Abraham said of his wife Sarah, "She's my sister." So same problem, same mistake, same lack of faith and trust that he had before when he went to Egypt. We see that same problem here when he's in the area of the Philistines outside of Gerar. So he says that to protect his skin. Then Abimelech was the king of Gerar, and he liked what he saw with Sarah, and he sent for her and took her. Okay, she's 89 years old, but still a raving beauty. And so Abimelech takes her. Now, there's a problem here. There's many problems. Number one, where's your faith, Abraham? Where's your trust? Didn't you learn the lesson before when you went to Egypt and the whole problem that caused? Why are you doing this again? But on top of that, there's a bigger problem. Remember what happened back in chapter 18? At the beginning of verse 10, Yahweh had told him, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Okay? God had kicked that off in 18 and said, "Hey, now it's time. You're now going to have this son I've been promising all these years. It's been almost 25 years since I came to you, since you left Haran, and I started giving you these promises. Now I'm going to do it, and within a year, Sarah's going to have a kid. Well, guess what? Sarah is now taken by Abimelech. Well, the kid that she's to have is to be Abraham's kid, not Abimelech's kid. Okay, so it's definitely getting in the way of and threatening God's plan. So, God protects His plan, though. No matter what we do to screw up God's plan cannot be thwarted. God's plan cannot be screwed up. And so God protects His plan here. We see verses 3 to 7. But God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, "You're as good as dead because of the woman that you've taken. She is a married woman." Now Abimelech had not gone near her, so he said, "Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation? Now, didn't he say to me, 'She's my sister'? And didn't she also say that he's my brother? I've done all this with a clear conscience and clean hands." Well, then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that you've done this with a clear conscience. So, I've kept you away from sinning against her. This is why I did not let you touch her. Now, return the man's wife, because he's a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not return her, you can be sure that you and all of yours will die." Okay, so God intervenes directly with Abimelech to first he keeps him from touching her, and then he definitely gets his attention and tells him to return her. What's also interesting here is that this is the first time we see a prophet, the word prophet, and Abraham is the first one called a prophet in the Bible. Okay. Well, how did Abimelech respond to this vision that he got from God? Well, early the next morning, okay, not just whenever he got around to it, but early the next morning, Abimelech summoned all his officials and told them what had happened, and they were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham in and said, "What have you done to us? How have I wronged you that you have brought such great guilt upon me and my kingdom? You've done things to me that should not be done." And Abimelech asked Abraham, "What is your reason for doing this?" He didn't waste any time. Early in the morning, he got up and he called Abraham in and he confronted the problem and addressed the problem with Abraham right then. So, why did Abraham lie to Abimelech? Verses 11 to 13. Abraham replied, "I said to myself, 'There's surely no fear of God in this place, and they'll kill me because of my wife. Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God had me wander from my father's household, I said to her, 'Now this is how you can show your love to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he's my brother.'" Okay, so again, he's trying to protect himself. He is afraid that God would not protect him in this place, so he has this scheme to be protected. Okay, and again, he's saying, "That's really not a lie, because she really is my sister. I just didn't tell you the whole story that she's also my wife." Okay, well, it's still a lie. Despite this lack of trust, God's patience with Abraham is just amazing. He continues to shower blessings on Abraham. And even through this, through Abraham not trusting God, God still blesses him. We see in 14 to 16, it says, "Then Abimelech brought sheep and cattle, male and female slaves, and gave them to Abraham. And he returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, 'Okay, my land is before you. Live wherever you like.'" Okay, just like Pharaoh knew that he was up against God, Abimelech knows he's up against God. This is a prophet of God. And so he's very careful with what he does with and for Abraham here. He says to Sarah, he said, I'm giving your brother 1,000 shekels of silver. Okay? It's about 25 pounds of silver. This is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. You are completely vindicated." Okay? So this evens the score. Everything's done. It's all clean now. So he gives him lots of sheep, cattle, slaves, money, and the right to live anywhere in the land. How did God allow Abraham then to be a blessing to Abimelech? Okay? You've got, again, he's called to be blessed to be a blessing. So we see the blessed part. Now, how is he a blessing? 17. Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and a slave girl so that they could have children again, because Yahweh had closed up every womb in Abimelech's household because of Abraham's wife Sarah. Okay? So Abraham prayed for Abimelech, and God healed Abimelech's household from infertility. Going on, how do we see that God began to make Abraham into a great nation, or make his name great? Chapter 21, verses 22 to 24. At that time, and by the way, we're skipping chapter 21, 1 through 21. We'll hit those next week. Okay. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his forces, said to Abraham, "God is with you in everything you do. Now, swear to me here before God that you will not deal falsely with me or my children or my descendants. Show to me and the country where you're now living as an alien the same kindness that I've shown to you." Abraham said, "I swear it." Okay. So Abimelech's getting a little concerned. He knows he cannot go against Abraham because Abraham is God's prophet, God's servant, and Abraham's pretty wealthy, powerful guy. Remember many chapters ago, he had 318 fighting men. Who knows how many he's got now? And so Abimelech finds it important. Abimelech, the king of Gerar, a big, powerful town or city, finds a need to make a treaty with Abraham. Well, how was Abraham's view of Abimelech confirmed as a man of honor with the true fear of God? Because you see, he's recognizing Yahweh and recognizes God here, and doesn't want to get on God's wrong side. 25 to 26. Then Abraham complained to Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. But Abimelech said, "I don't know who's done this. You didn't tell me, and I only heard about it today." So, you know, Abraham pointed out a little problem, and Abimelech apologized. "I didn't know about that." And so they made this treaty. And what kind of treaty? Verse 27, "So Abraham brought sheep and cattle and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a treaty." Okay, so we have these large animals, and we looked at that last week with the blood covenant. So it's possibly a blood covenant they made that involved sacrificing large animals and giving gifts to each other. And so you see the gifts were given, and we've got these large animals involved. Could be a blood covenant. What was done to help each other remember the treaty? 28 through 31. Abraham set apart 7 ewe lambs from the flock, and Abimelech asked Abraham, "What is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you've set apart by themselves?" He replied, "Accept these 7 lambs from my hand as a witness that I dug this well." Okay? Talking about this well that he had complained about before. So that place was called Beersheba because the two men swore an oath there. Beersheba means, Beer is well, and Sheba is oath. So it's well of the oath. Okay? So you'll hear a lot about Beersheba as we continue to march through the Old Testament. A lot of things, it pops up from time to time, but you see how it got its name here is the well of the oath. And so these lambs were there, were given to Abimelech as witnesses to remind Abimelech of this. Okay. What did Abraham do to thank God for blessing him with greatness so that he could be a blessing? Verse 32, "After the treaty had been made at Beersheba, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his forces, returned to the land of the Philistines. And then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there he called upon the name of Yahweh, the eternal God." So he planted a tree in the desert. Okay, happens to be a tree. The tamarisk tree is one that could actually live down there. So he plants this tree at Beersheba at the well and worships God. Okay, again, you see during major events in Abraham's life over and over again, what does he do? He worships God. He builds altars all over. He worships God whenever he has these major events in his life. Did Abraham return to the land of Canaan that God had promised to give to his descendants? Verse 34. No, Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines for a long time. So they had this alliance. He had this alliance with the king of Gerar, with Abimelech, and it was a good alliance. And they took care of each other. They lived together well, and we don't see any strife between them. Now, a later group of people called the Philistines in that land later during the time of Saul and David do become problems. But at this time, with the people that were there, the Canaanites or whatever it was there living in Gerar. They got along with Abraham just fine. Okay? So that brings us through chapter 21. Next week we will take a look at Isaac and also Ishmael and some of those stories there. Let's close with prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the stories that you give us. Some amazing stories, because there's some amazing people, both people of faith like Abraham, and Lot was a man of faith, but both of them also faltered. They both had times where they failed to trust you. They had times where they didn't discern properly your will, your way. And yet you were there for them. You protected them. You cared for them. You blessed them. You called them back to you. And we thank you for those stories, because it's the same with us, that we'll stray, but you're there calling us back. You bless us despite our our rejection of you at times, our falling away from you at times. We thank and praise you for that you loved us so much, that you sent your Son, so that he's always calling us back to you, even though we don't deserve it. We pray this in his name. Amen.